Good morning. It is Friday, April 26th. It is 7 minutes after nine. You're listening to Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC. And we start the day talking about the big announcement yesterday from the mayor of Indianapolis. He announced that the city, or rather he, is pursuing a Major League Soccer team.
If you choose to get into bed with loose people, then you should not be surprised when they behave loose with people other than you. And this is the thing about business people in the city of Indianapolis. They have been screwed by Joe Hogsett so many times on so many different areas, and yet one election after another, they have almost universally stood behind this guy. And so a big part of you yesterday wants to look at the Indy 11 and Ursel Özdemir and those people that are involved with that and go, gosh darn it, I feel so bad for you about what this dirty, rotten politician has essentially done basically behind your back and is stabbing you in the back for your decade plus of goodwill to the city of Indianapolis and your effort to make Indianapolis a better, more vibrant place. However, Hogsett has been doing this sort of thing his entire time he's been mayor of the city, and almost universally the business people in this city stand behind him. So it's hard for me to feel bad for the Indy 11, even though they're getting totally screwed.
Well, it does make you question, if you were to do business here in Indianapolis, the future, because you never know. However, Donnie Burgess has reported from WIBC that Hogsett's office said 11 Park was never more than a proposal. There was no agreement.
Okay, so let's kind of reset for everybody exactly what took place yesterday and in the lead up to it, because I you'd think many people would be aware, but there may be some who are not. So obviously we have a minor league soccer team, the Indy 11, kind of, and I realize I'm oversimplifying it and some soccer nut is going to be mad at me, but it's basically like AAA baseball. Okay, it's like sort of like the Indianapolis Indians, but they're for soccer. And
although they're not a farming team,
right? No, but I'm trying to just put in very broad perspectives people understand what we have here in the city of Indianapolis. And for many, many years, the Indy 11 has desired, they've sort of been nomads, they played in a variety of different places. They desired to have their own soccer stadium. And one of the concepts that the ownership group came up with was, let's revamp an area that is desperately in need of revitalization. And if we can get some help from the government to facilitate that, we will proceed with that venture. And we will not only build a soccer stadium, we'll develop a community around the soccer stadium, and it's a win-win for everybody. So what they finally came up with after years of pursuing some sort of public money, that wasn't going to work, bonding, that wasn't going to work. They got the legislature, they being the Indy 11, to create, and keep in mind, this is with the blessing of Joe Hogsett, with his administration, the city of Indianapolis, everybody was on board with this. We finally found something that kind of everybody could agree on. They came up with this idea of, hey, the legislature will create a special taxing district. We're going to get, I'm oversimplifying, but we don't have 9 hours to go into this. Basically, what would happen is all the tax revenue in that district would stay in that area to prop up the area. So the ownership group of the 11 would take the risk. They'd take the bonds. They would put forward the money. They'd build the soccer stadium. They'd build the development around it. But in return, the tax revenue from that area would go to, over time, pay that ownership group for the investment in the area, and everybody would be made whole. And then in the end, you would get something that would be phenomenal for everybody. So this passed the legislature, passed the General Assembly. It's a portion of property, basically catty corner to Lucas Oil Stadium. It's very near Victory Field as well. And if you drive past it right now, you see the demolition. You see the progress being made on this thing that you would assume within a couple of years they were moving forward towards a brand new stadium for the Indy 11, towards this economic development boom of restaurants and hotels or apartments or whatever is going to go there. And yet yesterday at about, I don't know, it seemed like about 1:30, this big tweet comes out from IBJ and their corresponding employees saying, Keystone, I think is the name of this group, is pulling out of this development, and they don't trust the city of Indianapolis, and they're saying the city of Indianapolis hasn't lived up to their basically obligation or word or whatever. Well, then immediately after that,
clearly they got word of what Hogsett was doing on Monday.
The city of Indianapolis announces Joe Hogsett has called a press conference for, I think it was 5:30, mm-hmm. and he's got a big announcement involving sports. And Hogsett comes out and goes, hey, I've gone to New York and I am in the process, we are in the process of plowing forward to try to bring a Major League Soccer team, so the equivalent of Major League Baseball or the National Basketball Association, to the city of Indianapolis. And everybody is just looking at each other going, how did we go from multi-billion dollar development and everybody's on board with the Indy 11 to now that's not going to happen, and now we're going for Major League Soccer?
Right.
There's like this huge, it's like if you suffered from amnesia and there's this huge gap in your memory of what happened, and the public is looking here going, what the hell's going on? And Joe Hogsett doesn't have any answers for that.
Okay, so this whole Indy 11 thing has been going on for about a decade now.
Yeah,
it didn't finally happen.
Yesterday, and this is what a scumbag Hogsett is. I think yesterday was the 11th anniversary of when they announced,
right,
we're bringing the Indy 11. He did this on their birthday, their anniversary. Hey, thanks for all you've done for the city. Just the whole thing was like out of some sort of like movie or something where you'd go, that's totally unbelievable. The government wouldn't actually work that way, but it did.
So is it because the Indy 11 park would not be big enough to hold an MLS team? So that deal's not going to happen. We're going to go in this other direction. Is it because financing fell through? There's a big price tag to get MLS here. Who's paying for that? There are so many questions about what is going on and not a lot of details from Hogsett's office. It feels like I were to go into a store and say, wow, I really like that dress. I like those shoes. I like that purse. I want all of it, please. Okay, great. Are you going to pay for it? Who's paying for it?
Well, and so Hogsett claims, or if you kind of read through it, he's got an ownership group lined up. So let's clarify. To get a Major League Soccer team, the entry fee, for lack of a better term, is believed it'll be $500 million. So you've got to walk in before you finance a stadium, the team, all this other stuff. You've got to be able to walk in with $500 million. And it is believed that Ursel Özdemir, who is the owner, the Indy 11 guy, Keystone, all of him, while he is very rich, he is not that rich. And what you kind of are led to believe is Hogsett and his people have this group lined up. Now, they have not disclosed who it is. It is a very small amount of people who could possibly put this together in this city. And some names that have been thrown out of the Pacers ownership group, Peyton Manning's name has been floated. That doesn't mean that these are the people at all. Now, Jim Irsay, who could have done it, has come out already and said, it's not me.
Yeah.
I'm not a part of this. But what you're led to believe from, if you kind of put everything together, again, you're getting zero transparency from Hogsett, which is par for the course. By the way, I do love, my favorite part of this is for 4 years, we have begged the media to dig into where was Joe Hogsett during the riots, mm-hmm. when the city burned and he totally disappeared.
Yeah.
And they won't lift a finger on that. But because they love the Indy 11, now you've got digging like it's going out of style, Casey. So the mayor disappears during the riots. Bah, nobody cares about that.
No big deal.
But the Indy 11 are getting screwed.
Wait a minute, soccer,
what?
We're
going to get to the bottom of this. So what you're led to believe is Hogsett basically determined Ursel Özdemir does not have the financial ability to pull the after we've given him a decade, he can't get a Major League Soccer team here. We realize he's proposed this fabulous thing that's really going to benefit the city for a team that is kind of universally beloved with a very hardcore group of people who love soccer and they do very well with their attendance. But screw that. We think we've got a chance to get Major League Soccer. So we are plowing forward with Major League Soccer. Now, my question will be, because just because you've submitted a proposal or a bid or you've got the ear of Major, there's other cities that desperately want a Major League Soccer team. I think what, like Tampa and Sacramento are on this list. What if you don't get it? You have now burned the Indy 11 bridge.
Mm-hmm. That
you've totally torched
done.
That.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens if you don't get a Major League Soccer team?
Well, they say that this group of investors is led by an experienced and well-respected sports executive who has led leadership roles in MLS and global soccer. So you had mentioned Peyton Manning's name. I don't necessarily think that's him. I mean, like, is David Beckham going to be buying this team for Indianapolis? I think it's great, like they want to brand Indianapolis as a sports city. And with all of the events that we host every year, fantastic. But can, we can't maintain two teams.
Well, and so that's, and we'll get into this later on in the show, because every hour we'll kind of touch on this in some capacity, because it's a huge story and there's so many tentacles to it. And we could do a whole show on this topic, Casey, because there's the reality of the actual just nuts and bolts of what's taking place. Then there's the political drama and theater of this. And just until we get into this next hour, I would just tell people this. And, you know, I have this saying. If you invite a vampire into your house, you cannot be angry when the vampire drains your blood, because that's what a vampire is. And the business community has repeatedly invited this vampire, Joe Hogsett, into the, there is no loyalty with Joe Hogsett. There is no sense of obligation from Joe Hogsett. He feels nothing to anyone but himself. And so, again, while I want to feel bad for Indy 11 and Ursel Özdemir, I don't think I can, because we've had three opportunities to keep this guy from being able to pull this sort of crap, and nobody has ever stepped up through financial resources, political capital, whatever, to get someone else elected to prevent this sort of thing from happening. So Joe Hogsett is being Joe Hogsett, and so it's just an interested observer at this point. Get the popcorn ready. I think there's going to be lawsuits. I think there's going to be discovery. I just think we've scratched the surface on what's going on here.
You're listening to Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC. Here we go with some fire on a Friday for you. It is Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC. So hundreds of construction workers turned out to support Donald Trump in New York. And one guy has gone viral as he has captured the heart of the nation and the sentiment of a lot of people. A reporter asked him a question, and this is how it went down.
What's it like seeing so many Republicans in Manhattan, so many Trump supporters in Manhattan? Does that surprise you?
No, not at all. It's turning now. Trump's turn again.
What's your message to Joe Biden?
F*** you.
Oh, boy. He's not mincing words there at all. But well, I think that's a look into what the blue-collar people feel like.
Well, so this is interesting, because nobody believes New York is going to turn red, or that Donald Trump is going to somehow carry New York on election night. However, you're right, Casey. It is, that guy makes no difference in New York. That guy makes a huge difference in Michigan. That guy makes a huge difference in Wisconsin. Let's throw Pennsylvania out, even though he'd make a huge difference, because nobody has any idea who's voting in Pennsylvania. So does that guy exist, and on what scale does that guy exist in states that will decide the outcome of the upcoming presidential election?
Okay, so here's the same answer, only this time it's done a little less antagonistic.
A lot of people are talking about how unusual it is to see so many Trump supporters in Manhattan at 4, 5, 6 in the morning. Does that surprise you?
No, absolutely not. Demographics have changed. The administration that's in there right now isn't doing what they're supposed to be doing. They're not taking care of American people. So we need somebody in there to take care of American people. That's it.
What's your message to Joe Biden?
Joe Biden, give it up.
Your time is up.
You know what's interesting, and I enjoy hearing clips like that, because so often when you see, I mean, obviously yesterday, these lunatics all across the state and even the country who are protesting in support of a terrorist organization like Hamas, you forget that there still are people who have American pride out there. And I've been watching one of my favorite TV shows of all time was a show called The Americans, which was on FX in the middle part of the last decade. And Kerry Russell and Matthew Rhys are the star of the show. And they're these Russian, it takes place in the 1980s. And they're these Russian spies who live as Americans. And it's the battle, the Cold War. It's the Reagan era of the Cold War. And they're these two spies who live in Virginia. And they do, of course, all these things. But one of the premises of the show is how much pride in the 1980s people had in the idea of Americanism. And that's sort of the overarching theme of the show is, these Russians have pride in being, you know, Soviets or Russians, and Americans have pride in being American. And the idea was this clear contrast of what America means and what Russia means, and the pride in what we had that we were going to win because we were so much different than them and they had it against us. And you get that feeling today that that's kind of lost, the pride of being an American and American idealism and American exceptionalism and what that means to people, and do people get it? And when you hear those guys, you realize that people work with their hands, people who build stuff, people who make America great, you know, no pun intended. still believe, they're still out there, and they still believe that that can be achieved again. And Donald Trump represents that to those people, that America used to be something that you would be inspired by, that you would say, gosh darn it, we're so proud that that's us. And that has largely been eviscerated from, you know, being taught in public schools. It's certainly been eviscerated from the lexicon and dialogue of the mainstream national media. And it does give you a little enthusiasm and a little optimism to say, hey, even if I don't agree with everything Trump does, I get that he kind of represents that. And it's cool that there's people out there who still have that passion and fire.
Well, I think it's also nice that there's this guy and he's speaking and he says, you know, hey, the demographics have changed. They're not putting America first. He knew what he was talking about. And when you compare that to that other clip yesterday that was going viral of the reporter asking one of the protesters on the college campus that, you know, and we continually are being spoon-fed that narrative, and the focus from the mainstream media, it just keeps going to these college campuses. And they ask the girl, what are you protesting? And she says, oh, I don't know. What are we protesting? She has to ask her friend. She has no clear idea even what they're doing. You can definitely tell the difference, and keep in mind who is more apt to go vote.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, Caitlin Lang from the Indy Star is going to join us. She, along with Ryan Martin, have a fabulous new piece out about Brad Chambers, who's, of course, running for governor. And Brad Chambers is running on this, I'm this incredible business guy, and I'm going to create all this economic development that's going to be so great for our state. Indy Star, along with Mirror Indy, have this amazing new piece out about this sweetheart deal that Brad Chambers and his company got from the city of Indianapolis in 2011, and how they have not lived up to their obligation to the taxpayer. And it's very similar.
What's going on with the MLS announcement?
Well, right. And Brad Chambers' time heading the IEDC and some of the allegations there about the failure of these businesses to live up to their obligation. It's an incredible story. We'll talk about it next.
It's Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC.
Come on.
So an incredible story at Indy Star about how Brad Chambers and his company haven't lived up to their obligation to the taxpayers. 93 WIBC, it is the Kendall and Casey Show. I'm Rob Casey's here. Casey, did you see this expose in Indy Star about all this money Brad Chambers and his company got from the city of Indianapolis, and how, according to the Star, in a fabulous piece from Caitlin Lang, they haven't paid the money back?
Not once, but twice, in air quotes, because that's what they used, the word bailout.
Yeah, so this is fascinating because he's running, of course, for governor as, hey, I'm Mr. Business Guy, and I'm the guy that can bring all the economic development. And it's fascinating because he was the head of the IEDC, and we've talked with Caitlin Lang before, and she had a piece on this about how the IEDC often doesn't live up to its obligation to the taxpayers. And so Caitlin Lang, now obviously with Indy Star, joins us now on the WIBC hotline. Caitlin, this was an incredible piece. Tell us a little bit about Brad Chambers apparently not living up to his obligation to the taxpayers.
Yeah, thanks for having me. One real quick note, this was reported in conjunction with Mirror Indy's Ryan Martin. So it certainly wasn't all me. You know, I have to give due credit to Mirror Indy as well. So definitely excited to have them in town. But basically, the story stems from a 2011 deal where Indianapolis issued TIFAC bonds and loaned Brad Chambers' company $86 million to develop CityWay. You know, there were a couple of requirements in that deal. One, that the developer would be responsible for debt payments to bondholders using some help from tax dollars. And then two, that the developer would repay Indy for the remainder of the loan in 2021. Like you mentioned, that didn't happen. The company was granted an extension until 2023, and then the developer still has not paid. So that's kind of where we are today.
Okay, so this is fascinating to me for a couple of reasons. So just very high level, let me make sure I have this right. So the city of Indianapolis in 2011, they want to do this CityWay project. It's this big development on the southeast side of downtown. They take this bond, they give the money essentially to Brad Chambers and his company and say, you go make this development happen. This is your world. And then you will pay the money back. And once you've paid the money back from, for lack of a better term, profits, everybody will be made whole and we'll have this beautiful development. Is that correct?
Yeah. But it was an unusual, and experts viewed it as a generous deal at the time because usually, usually on these projects, the bonds are going towards either, you know, public infrastructure or just a small part of the overall construction. Like think of a parking garage for a hotel, something like that. So it was viewed as generous because the city was fronting most of the financing for this project. And then also just, you know, the fact that he was able to use tax dollars to help with his debt repayment. So, and it wasn't ever bid out. So, you know, Eli Lilly, which wanted this project, had essentially chosen Brad Chambers' company to complete this, and the city greenlit it.
So not only did they get all of this money, the $31 million in state and local taxes to pay for half of it, but they also got a long lease. Will that lease continue?
So it's unclear what will happen now. Basically, yes, of course. Basically, they were supposed to, they were supposed to pay back the city again in 2023, and they haven't. Now, we did reach out to the development company, and they said they do expect to repay the loan this year. But we don't, you know, I don't have any clarity on when that would be. And the city, you know, isn't really providing much details on their next plans to try to get that money, but just saying that they are still, you know, working hard to come to a solution.
Caitlin Lang from IndyStar is our guest. They have a fabulous new piece out about Brad Chambers and this company that he ran, and a large amount of money they got from the city of Indianapolis, loans which have not been repaid back. You can find it all over at IndyStar.com. So, Caitlin, this is relevant to me for a couple reasons. We had you on several months ago when you were over at State Affairs, and we were talking about this piece that you guys had, which was great, about how the IEDC, which Brad Chambers oversaw, this is kind of similar stuff. They do these big announcements, and there would be all these taxpayer concessions, and then either the many of these businesses weren't living up to the obligation, or you couldn't get information if they lived up to the obligation. This kind of seems to be a trend now with this guy, either companies or quasi-government agencies that he oversees.
Yeah, I think the bigger picture is just that when it comes to these development deals or economic, you know, any sort of economic incentive deals, the devil's always in the details, you know, and there is room for risk and for taxpayers to be on the hook. And I just think that's so important for us to remember with any of these deals, and for us to actually go back and check on, you know, the pros and cons of what these developments have brought to these cities, because it is a lot of money being thrown around, and you know, it is taxpayer money, both when it was the IEDC doing it and when it's the city of Indianapolis doing it. So I think that's sort of the big takeaway I got from this.
So, Caitlin, they had 10 years to obtain some private financing to repay the debt. That deadline was in 21. They extended it to December of 23. Still nothing. So I guess two questions. What is the deadline now? And do you know how much is still owed?
Yeah, so the deadline's already passed. So they're past that. There is no new deadline yet. This is now, they're supposed to pay up per the agreement, and they haven't. There's still about $70 million that
how much?
Chambers Company, about $70 million that Chambers Company still owes.
So that's an incredible portion of the original loan here, almost 13, 14 years later.
Right. Yeah. Yes. There's still a lot left. And I think, too, the other thing to remember is Brad Chambers himself has loaned his campaign $9.6 million,
yeah.
Right? I just think that's another important caveat in this whole conversation.
Yeah, let's touch on that for a second, because I think where you're going with this is, hey, wait a second, this guy's got almost $10 million to loan himself to run for governor, but he still owes, according to Caitlin, you're saying 70-ish million dollars, or 70-plus million dollars, to the taxpayers. How does he have money to pay himself to run for, or pay for his governor's campaign, but not have to give us our money back?
Right. And that's the point that, like, Julia Vaughn of Common Cause Indiana brought up is, look, just because he's got $9 million tied up in a political campaign doesn't forgive him of his responsibilities to taxpayers here in Marion County, is what she had said. I will point out, though, of course, that this deal, it wasn't necessarily Brad Chambers himself that was on the hook for repaying the city. It's his company. So, you know, it's not as easy as simply diverting the money that he's spending on his campaign to repaying the city. But I think it is, it doesn't make the optics look great.
So I guess my big questions are, you mentioned the deadline has passed. There's kind of the, he hasn't, you know, his company hasn't paid. And now there's the, or what? What's going to happen? And this also creates an uncomfortable situation. This guy's running for governor, and yet his company still owns the capital city money. So
right.
The or what? Do we know?
Yeah. We don't totally know. I mean, the city could always take over the development. That was kind of the alternative built in, is the city could decide to do that. I assume they don't want to, since they didn't in 2021 and they haven't yet, but that is an option in the agreement. And basically they could either, you know, I guess run the development themselves or sell it to another buyer. So that is a potential, but hypothetically the company says it's going to pay back Indianapolis this year for the loan repayment. So, you know, it's kind of a wait and see what happens at this point between the city and the development company.
Caitlin, we'll get you out of here with this. We had actually booked this interview with you before the big announcement from Joe Hogsett came down yesterday, which we started our show with, about Indy 11 and I mean, obviously all the drama associated with that. But I think this piece is so timely because Hogsett was so vague on details yesterday, and it almost made it sound like it's going to be something maybe similar to this, where there's a whole bunch of public money that goes into it and then the private people pay it back. Yeah, I just thought this piece was super timely, given it seemed like Hogsett may be walking down a similar path with the Major League Soccer team.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he's going to need money from Indianapolis in order to make that a reality. I haven't followed the soccer deal closely. I didn't attend the press conference, but, you know, you can't get a major league team without the money. So definitely something to keep in mind with all of these development projects. I mean, the city and all cities frequently do these sorts similar projects, I should say. You know, you had a Hotel Carmichael in Carmel. You have the hotel that the city of Indianapolis is doing as well. So there's always going to be deals like this that warrant some scrutiny. And, you know, I think it's kind of in the eye of the beholder if you see these deals as good or flawed. You know, with Cityway, we now have a really impressive area downtown. I mean, I like Cityway personally. So it's kind of an interesting give and take here when it comes to these development deals of how much is too much money, how much is too much risk.
Yeah, the piece, everybody should go read it. It's the title is Brad Chambers' company received bailout from Indy after missing loan repayment deadline. Caitlin Lang and Ryan Martin in on the piece, and Caitlin joined us today. Fabulous work, Caitlin. Thank you so much, and we appreciate a few moments here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You're listening to Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC. So what was that noise you made? Did it go like this?
I can't, Casey.
Yes, you can.
I mean, I know this is a thing, and it's happening.
And you will. It's actually what you're getting paid for, so do it.
Can I just read you this headline from our friends at the Capital Chronicle, and then this quote from Suzanne Crouch in this?
Sure.
So they've been doing the Capital Chronicle as kind of a expose or a, you know, piece on each person running for governor. Mm-hmm. And so I guess it was Suzanne Crouch's day.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to read you the headline.
Okay.
And this is, keep in mind, this is the person who said absolutely nothing for 7 years. This is the person who, through all the tax increases, the mask mandates, the Malik Muhammad stuff, the government shutdowns, just nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. And this is the headline. Suzanne Crouch seeks governorship for the voiceless.
She knows from experience.
If anybody knows about being completely voiceless,
it's her.
It would indeed be Suzanne Crouch. Now, can I read you her quote about COVID?
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, keep in mind, and this it all comes obviously full circle, like with the Micah Beckwith stuff. Mm-hmm. The only check and balance whoever gets in there of these top four that have a shot, whether it's Crouch, it's Doden, it's Chambers, it's Braun, you can't trust any of them because they all have their own track record of putting everyone but you first. And keep in mind, if Suzanne Crouch had spoken up during COVID, had stood up and used her bully pulpit, who knows what might not have happened. If she'd have raised her hand and said, no, wait a second. Mm-hmm. The governor doesn't have the ability to just shut society down. I'm calling on the governor right now to call the General Assembly back in and let them have a voice in this and let them decide if everyone has to wear a mask or if everyone's business has to be shuttered. She didn't do any of that. And, you know, she's tried to play both sides of the fence on this thing because she knows Holcomb is loathed by a huge portion of Republican primary voters. Yet, for some reason, she still feels this undying need to kiss his ass and not criticize him.
Well, she still does have to work with him for a few
months.
But no,
she doesn't. This is summer. This is senioritis at this point. He's
not
done.
Legislation.
Yeah. And she doesn't have to work. She never had to work with him. She had to work for us. That's the problem. She was too busy working for him.
Right.
Instead of her. Listen to this quote from Suzanne Crouch. There were bad things that came from COVID, but there were some good things.
What were the good things?
One of the bad things is we all suffered a mental health crisis.
Right.
One of the good things is we all suffered a mental health crisis.
What?
So there became more of an awareness and a sense of urgency to do something. Oh, so because you made everyone miserable and you ruined the lives of everyone, everyone better understood the people who previously weren't miserable, what it was like to be miserable. And that's a positive thing to Suzanne Crouch.
I just saw this study that came out, and Indiana ranks 8th on a list. And 8th is bad, meaning high. Lowest percentage in the nation of adults with a mental health illness who have not had their needs met.
She then goes on to say this. It is awkward, but at the end of the day, you have to do what's right. What? I've always wanted to be a voice for the voiceless. What? For people who have no one standing up for them and people who can't afford the high power, highly paid lobbyists that roam the hallways at the statehouse. Lady, that's been the past 7 years of the entire Holcomb administration.
She had the job, right?
You had the job where you could have been the voice for the voiceless. You had the job where people were begging you for 7 years to be the voice for the voiceless. That is so beyond inflammatory. That enrages me, Casey, that this woman who said nothing for 7 years while people were begging. You know when you could have been a voice for the voiceless? When those law-abiding people went to the governor's mansion in April of 2020 and simply said, we don't want any free stuff. We don't want any special treatment. All we want is for you to open up society so we can go to work and work our jobs and run our businesses. And Holcomb called him a petri dish. Mm-hmm. What did Crouch say then? Nothing. What did Crouch say when Holcomb had a VIP meet and greet with a domestic terrorist? Nothing. Oh my gosh, Casey. And these people say this with a straight face. You have to take us to break because I'm going to say something that's going to get me in real trouble.
Okay, so the FTC voted to ban non-compete agreements. And coming up, we're going to speak with Stephen P. New, lawyer extraordinaire. He's going to break it down for us, both the legal side and the political side of things, what it all means. That's coming up on 93 WIBC.